Tip today in association with Slattery's of Pecan, your main Peugeot dealer for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.
Thanks, Ali. Welcome back to the second hour of Tip Today. 1800-938-007. That's our free phone number to speak to Trudy. It won't cost you a cent. We have that lovely prize going for you, by the way, as well, in association with Tip FM's Health and Wellbeing Expo that's happening this Sunday at the Clonmel Park Hotel. We have a lovely prize from Revive Active. They're Ireland's leading super supplement company, and we're giving away a month's supply of Revive every day this week. It's based on your interaction with us by text, joining in the conversations, or coming up with something brand new. But give us a full name and an address so that we can enter you properly into our competition. Now, I'm glad to be joined in the studio by Deputy Matty McGrath. Good morning to you, Matty.
Morning, friend.
Several things we want to chat about, Matty. But first of all, we were chatting off air about the whole business of the horses on the council land and some dreadful scenes there and some awful stuff over the past few months. You have some thoughts on that?
I do indeed, and I listened to Anne within some day as well. She does tremendous work, and just to support her and say that's a myth that she gets money out of, it's a passion. Yeah. And her colleagues that attended that meeting in Clonmel from the Limerick Animal Rescue and others, they're just passionate about animals and they want to care for them. And they get awful threats, have got awful threats. Limerick people at night are shocking what they have to face. But look, the council are here, they're probably 80% responsible for all these horses that are on land that's not owned by anybody. It's owned
by
the council.
How are they responsible, Matty?
Well, they own it. And then for last number of years as well, there was a lot of NAMA land. But that in the main has been tidied up now and been taken over by new owners and whatever. So they have land everywhere, man. I mean, they have sites. Look, they've took away, it went back 30 years. They took out bins and roads to straighten them. In my case, in my own area, we had to retake them back there. Farmers have taken them back recently as well, you know, on a long 100-year lease, 99-year lease, and maintaining them because they left them grow wild. They were ideal ground for horses. They have housing land all over the county, and that's all. It's totally abandoned. There's no fencing. It's not checked. Some is not even, they could be leased to people. It's not leased. There could be an income from it. And that's all. That's the same up and down the country. Then the motorway, as you know, left huge swaths of land and areas as well. So, and the other thing then is they have noxious weeds grown on them every year. And farmers have been fined in the past for having the bucalons and having thistles, going back in the years, and I'm well aware of that. So they also have overgrown hedges hanging on them, and they're now appealing to landowners to cut their hedges. So they need to get their house in order, Tip County Council in this case, and deal with this problem, because in the main, 80% of them at least, if not more, of these horses that are being neglected, that haven't the chips, and haven't people have no land to own the house. You have to have the chip and the passport and an acre of land. They're on council property.
There's a huge amount of money involved in that. I mean, even if you want to get these animals impounded, we heard 21,000 it cost where Knocklofty was concerned.
Yes.
This is huge money coming out of the coffers of the local authority. Now, they may get some of it back from the Department of Agriculture, but still, it's money could be spent.
They're only getting back a certain amount of it. Of course it is. And that 21,000 was only for the lift. I mean, they were there nearly 3-4 weeks. They're being rehomed now, I understand, back to good homes. That costs money as well. Transport and veterinarians, everything else, as your last speaker and said. So look, I mean, it's time the council got the right in order. I mean, they come from other counties and been put on council land here in Tipperary as well. That came up quite evident last night. As I said, I have the sulking race and issue and the bill. But one thing I got admitted last Tuesday on Sean O'Rourke with the head of the Pavy Pint is that this is a new phenomenon. This is not more than 25 years old. The sulking. So that debunks the whole issue.
So what are you saying? It's not part of the culture then of the travelling people?
No. And he admitted that on National Airwaves last week. But what was more shocking on the National Airwaves when they did a Vox Pop was that the people they interviewed weren't aware of my bit, obviously, or whatever. And they said, what's he trying to do? 5,000 fine. Does he want us to be out robbing and stealing houses rather than sulky racing? I mean, that was stated on RT National Radio.
So, who said that?
He was one of the sulky racers in Limerick. That was
one of the travelling
community. You can podcast it on Sean O'Rourke show about 11 o'clock last Tuesday morning. So, I mean, this is the problem. And what Anne mentioned about her colleagues and being surrounded and being told, that happens all the time. They don't own them when there's any agency around. But somebody else says anything, or there's anything, they do own them. So we have a lot of tidying
up. What about people then who might say, listen, you're being divisive of people now, you're talking about travellers specifically now, even though there's other people involved in this, and this came up at the meeting I know you attended as well.
Indeed, there are other people, as I said, the IFA, and I spoke to the former chairman of IFA yesterday for a good while on this. They have a red alert system. The minute there's an animal, if there's an animal distressed on a farm, and 99% of the cases, which are only tiny percentage of cases anyway, that normally a mental health issue has occurred, or bad health of a farmer. Now they're ready, but straight away there's a red alert, and there's contacts out there to deal with these animals immediately, and they are dealt with, because if they're not, they'll be taken off of them, and the farmer will be in the front pages of the papers, even though he may be suffering from, you know, it has happened to a number of farmers in recent time with huge debts, just couldn't cope, illness, and then mental illness, and unable to manage. So, but the IFA and the other farm organisations deal with that, so we need to have the same whole cross agencies approach to this. And you know what I mean, there is an Amber Alert as well. Next time you have Sean Keaton on, you might ask him. I've become aware of an Amber Alert that the department have and the council have of, and they're supposed to be paying certain individuals that if there is a problem with horses, that they are contacted and they'll go deal with it. It's a kind of an Amber Alert.
Well, but Sean Keaton told me that the first stop shop has to be the Gardaí. You go to the Gardaí and that they will alert the people involved.
And that's fine, because the Gardaí are the enforcement of all the laws, as you know, are the police people, and we can't manage without them, and we need to support them. Yes, but the county council need to get their house in order. In this case, they need to get the land in order. They have land in every village, literally.
Last week they said they were getting their house in order, and the next day we had this incident.
Well,
and seemingly these horses were there for ages.
Yes, you said that 2, 3, 4, and 5 years. The day I remember when the minister came down, Dick Roach, and opened that new scheme. Those houses are probably, that extra land is there since, and that's not today, yesterday. I was in 2004, I think. So that's when, how long that's going on. It's the same everywhere. So there's land in every village, literally, and you will find overgrown, you'll find horses tied there, you'll find...
There inspectors within the local authority for this kind of thing? Are there people who...
No. They'll have to, the limited resources that they have now, they'll have to, instead of filling potholes, they'll have to send out in each area. It's just too big a county. The housing officials, you know, can't inspect the houses. The roads officials have enough to do with the roads. So they don't have environment officers. Like, they have a dog warden, but they have no horse wardens, you know. The real issue here, and I must examine it more, is in England, across the pond. The Gardaí aren't involved, the council aren't involved, the HSC or department aren't involved. It's one group of people set up, and they have the same powers as the police over there, and they deal with this. There's no messing. It's dealt with, and they're dealt with efficiently.
And that's what we need to do.
That's what we need to do here.
All right. Pat Murphy was telling me he dropped up to the Glenconner area there earlier on this morning. There's no animals in the field now, and seemingly there's some hay there now, ironically.
But your people will bring. People will bring hay, and will think, because people are in the goodness of their heart. Nobody wants to see an animal suffering.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody wants to see that. And I mean, I read some of the Facebook comments as well. People were looking after those horses all week, and, you know, seeing that animal and didn't find it dead, and pulling the curtains not to allow the children to look out. That children should be trained to understand horses and all kinds of animals.
All right, several other things I want to get through. Will you talk to me a bit about the road traffic amendment bill? Now, this is the bill that provides for automatic disqualification on a first offence for those convicted of driving while over the permitted limit of what is a 50 mg of alcohol. Shane Ross, this turned into a bit of a circus. What, he voted against his own amendment?
He did. Look, it was bizarre. We had a filibuster all before Christmas, and that's one of the oldest tricks in America ever, or in England. You can, if you don't agree with a debate, and if you have a minister who's so stubborn, won't listen, or won't, you know, give any way in amendments. So I had make no apologies for saying I filibustered it with a couple of colleagues from the Rural Independent Group. We expected Fianna Fáil. I had given commitments up and down the country. I was at a meeting with Deputy Cahill, with the ministers, one meeting I attended with the ministers, and Deputy Kelly as well said they would vote against this, but and the heel of the hunter sat in their hands again the other night. Look, he did, and there was drama then on the day, because I as an independent or a group, we have to have 10 members to call a vote. So we had, you know, five of our own, and then we needed some colleagues, but thankfully we rounded them up and we did get two. I'll name him, Deputy Bobby Aylward, a Kilkenny, a neighbour, and Deputy Kevin O'Keefe from Mitchelstown, a neighbour. They stood up to allow the vote, which is totally democratic, because I've done that before for votes that I was totally opposed to. But to get a chance to vote against it, I had to stand up with a 10 to make a 10 to allow a vote take place. if you understand me.
Yes.
And they, like I said, other TDs could have as well, and they didn't. So look, this bill, I'm not anti, first of all, I'm not pro drink driving, and it must be abolished and banned. But look, this attack on it, this effort on it, is really, really just simply, you know, one trick pony by Minister Ross. There's huge areas. I named it in my speech the other night, dozens of areas he could deal with in road traffic, including the sulky racing. And a child, I didn't know, but there was an inquest last week where a child, a 12-year-old, had got killed off, and that became my notice last Monday. He was on a mission here, and he just stubbornly, and he had no support. We called quorum several times because he was on his own in the chamber. No Fine Gael, no Labour, no Independent Alliance, his group, one Sinn Féin at all times, and for most of the time, I have pictures on my iPhone to prove it, no Fianna Fáil in the chambers, and three or four of us, drastical kind of stuff. So how he voted, look, that can happen. There's three buttons. Mm. There's a taw and a kneel and a stain, which is an abstain, and you can do that. But to do that then as a teller, I would have to correct it. I was a teller when I called the vote. But worse than that, he pressed another button of Minister's opponent, and that's the bigger mystery, whether he was in such a panic, because if I hadn't signed that form, I'm being told now, to him, for the Minister to change, the bill would have fallen. Now, I wasn't aware of that. The Minister that proposes has to vote for it. So I don't know what he was at, but he was so...
So basically you saved his ass,
well,
is that it?
That's what I'm being told now, to get it further out. Well, I signed the form, because it's normally done when a person makes a mistake, in fairness. Right. I think he told Matt Cooper on TV that he was colourblind, because there's red and green and amber.
Oh,
so I don't know. But anyway, it's a farce. There's huge other areas in legislation that must be checked with. I want the traffic corps augmented and supported. Mm. We've been diminished.
Now, what about Jackie Cahill said to me the other day that certain people, and I think he might have been looking towards you, were mischievous about this, because the bill has to be examined by the Oireachtas Committee. I mean, it's not a done deal.
Oh, it's not a done deal, but it's a done deal as far as, look, Fine Gael are supporting it and Sinn Féin are supporting it, so they have the numbers, and Fianna Fáil was supposed to be opposing it. But they got instructions on Wednesday night that the front bench had decided that they weren't opposing it any longer. So this is where we are. Jackie can answer himself to the Vintners.
Well, is it not a case that the Fianna Fáil are saying that they will vote against the legislation if their concerns are not addressed?
Only time will tell. As I said, they've been told back off by the headquarters, have decided that this is not a nice thing to be fighting with, because they're kind of labelling me and others, and so are the media, has been backward. We're not. We're representing our communities. We don't have the services in rural Ireland. The pubs, in many areas, as you know, is the only, there's not halls in villages. The pub and all the publicans pay wages, pay ESP, pay light, pay rates, and as I said, they pay staff. And many times after funerals and other events, they're all held in the pubs. And even criticism came the other night that GA medals are often presented to young teams. They are, because the GA club mightn't have the ground, mightn't have a facility. And we must remember, I know half a dozen publics in South Tip who are keeping lounges open. And you know, in the game you're in, otherwise, other than this, they don't play anymore gigs and bands, but they're keeping them open for functions. They're paying rates on them just to support their community. So they're an internal part of the fabric of a rural community, and Shane Ross doesn't understand. I sat him into the car one night in Care under the bridge, the railway bridge on the Tip Road, and we took a quick spin. My daughter was driving, and I got in the back and he was in the front. I showed him the Silver Sands, I showed him the Lady Gregory, I showed him the Cozy Kitchen, all closed. I showed him the Foot, I showed him the Caravansary. We swung around into Clonmeg Bridge where we were meeting a group of people, and it was late at night.
And what did he make of all?
And I continued into the show, and we came to Napperoonies, but the one in the Coast Road, closed as well at 9 o'clock, not closed, running very well by the people up there, in fairness, Margaret and her team. But we came on into O'Haney's and Bansha, closed as well. He was shocked, or he let on to be shocked to me, and brought him back to Care. 40, 50 minute journey, but all gone.
But obviously, I mean, whether you disagree with him or not, he's passionate about this as a way to save lives, and I suppose that is the answer.
He is certainly, but as I said, there's many, many more ways of saving life. The waterways, we have two people from Tipperary, and it's on his desk for 2 years now since he got in, and fairness, he did meet the people, Anne-Marie O'Brien and the Ismas in Tipperary, who two young men were drowned off Helvig. Mm. He's responsible for the waterways too, and there's absolutely no policing there. So I mean, there's many, many other areas of that he's involved in, and we need to get you mentioned the road this morning from Galbally.
Oh, listen, don't talk to me about that is
it fair
so
that people's cars are being wrecked?
So dangerous.
Actually, I travelled it Friday evening. I'm going out there with an engineer after lunch today in West Tip to a few sites, but that's one of the sites. That road is appalling, and the same thing happens every whole winter after the time of year when we get frost and get rain. And I mean, motors are going to NCTs and are paying a fortune for their tyres and wheels and tracking, and it's not fair. An old man, as you said, he could have been killed in that road last night trying to change a tyre
and he didn't have the right. Ah, it was just dreadful. Listen, will you stay with me, because I want to talk to you about the 8th Amendment in just a moment.
Join the conversation in Tipperary. Contact us through Facebook, Twitter, or email tiptoday@tipfm.com.
And you're very welcome back. And Deputy Matt McGrath is still with me. I suppose we have to talk about Micheál Martin's contribution regarding his decision to support the repeal of the Eighth Amendment to the Constitution. Very divisive within his own party. As a former Fianna Fáil person yourself, what do you make of that?
Yeah, and I have a lot of very close friends in Fianna Fáil, and a lot of close backbench colleagues in the Dáil. Look, and he did a part of his speech the other day, and remember I sat for 96% of that speech, that 6 hour debate so far, because I'm on the committee and I have been involved and I intend to sit it out. I was there for his speech. I wasn't surprised. Some people said I was surprised. I suppose the real surprise was that this was debated largely and the night before in the Fianna Fáil Parliamentary Party for over 3 hours. And my understanding and information is up to 23 TDs expressed their unease and displeasure at, you know, the eight being changed, which they were canvassed on and give those commitments to the public in the last election and different election, indeed on your programme. When you did the shows in the Horse and Jockey here in Tipperary's case. So, I mean, they were shocked in that is where, when I was in Fianna Fáil, everything was trashed out there, or meant to be. And then they were shocked that he would come into the Dáil with the number of the pro-choice people that in his party who were very active, his committee, the people who were on the committee with him, that he handpicked to put on the committee. So, like, I wasn't surprised because I knew from the behaviour of the people that he put on the committee that this was a complete, you know, wrong footage.
You might not be surprised, Matty, but his own party, like so many people in Fianna Fáil, yeah, totally surprised.
Yes, because he, as I said, they raised it. Kevin O'Keefe and others told me they heard it, they were driving down the road and they heard it at 3:30 or 4:00 on Thursday evening and said, I waited till the debate ended. But I'm not surprised, as I said, because I've had a few discussions, but only two in the last 5 years I was independent there after leaving Fianna Fáil, and the two issues that he cautioned me on was being too pro-life or being being seen as being anti-gay, which I'm not. I was anti-gay marriage, certainly, but I'm making the point, so I wasn't surprised. That's a huge surprise, and I'm out all weekend meeting supporters and meeting people, and they're ringing me and emailing me. They purely feel betrayed because, you know, we're not going to have any party now. And he can say it in, oh yeah, he asked in, that he hopes not going to be a divisive campaign, and certainly, but he's made it completely divisive, explosive in his own party.
Now, some people might say he's shown leadership, unlike what Leo did, who some people might see as sitting on the fence where this is concerned until a wording is come up with or
look,
whatever.
Look, the fence is getting very slippery now, and he's after falling off the fence. And Leo will fall off it too soon, because I see this as all being carefully choreographed. Him now as leader of the main opposition party as well. Sinn Féin, you know, are the same. Labour, so there's no political party in Dáil Éireann. Ray Neuwa are, and I salute him on it, but there's no, they've nobody in Dáil Éireann. There's no political party now leader that's holding the ground here. And on to the committee, I've been saying that the Attorney General should have been in that committee, or his representatives, defending an act that was inserted into the Constitution back in 83. That is the law of the land. We're talking about laws this morning not being enforced. I was there, and two others only, trying to defend the indefensible, not indefensible, but trying to defend against the might of the committee, who had been picked especially because of their views, and it was totally biased. I wouldn't mind saying that. But
well, they're going to say that's not the case.
Well, it's proven, sure. Yeah. I mean, and they had a premature vote to not keep the 3 or 4 weeks, a month into the business. So look, I'm not going to tell me old man what to do. That's his own business. But there's a lot of very hurt people.
I'd be interested in your opinion on some of the things he said. He was talking about why he changed his mind over the years. Oh, yeah. And he said that the amendment creates difficulties for obstetricians and has a negative impact on women's health care, including death. Mm. That sounds very profound.
Well, that never happened. And he also mentioned Savita. And God rest the lady.
Well, it did happen with Savita.
No, it didn't happen with Savita. Okay, I want to debunk that 100%. Anyone who wants to read the coroner's report, that's a total hijacking of the poor woman and her family. It didn't happen. It was just mismanagement, and sepsis developed because of neglect. And it didn't happen to Savita. And I'm shocked with him, a politician of such experience, and saying he wanted no divisiveness, to use Savita. He dragged her into his speech. But this is done by the drafters that are in the back rows of Fianna Fáil and the choreographing of the words. And that's actually a leaked document today that I've got in my possession from the pro-choice people of the things to use when cannabis and then debates, and one is Savita, 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 more Savita. It's awful. It isn't. Anyone wants to read the coroner's report, and I challenged some of the experts that came before us to say, was there one person ever convicted under the 2013 legislation? This 14 years in jail and a huge fine. No, not one. Was there one, could you tell me one case where somebody had died because of the Eighth Amendment? And she said it was a personal opinion then, which she retracted it when I challenged her. But other than that, it went unchallenged, all these kind of falsehoods at the committee, because there was only three of us. And it was difficult to speak in that committee because of the environment. That's one of the areas.
But do you accept that a guy's, and I'm talking about Micheál Martin here, that his views could evolve and could change based on what his perception of what's out there is concerned? I mean, do you accept that?
I know with 4 or 5 years that his views have changed on this. So he told the Dáil the other night that he, over the Christmas period, he looked at this long and hard, and he read the reports of the committee, the Eighth Amendment committee. Well, if anyone changed their views of that report, because, as I said, I was there for one, Ronan Mullen and Peter Fitzpatrick, and any independent and objective person, 28 pro-choice people and 5 pro-life people, only 2 came. So, I mean, if he based his change over Christmas on that, but I know that not to be true. I know that he came to me when I raised with Taoiseach Kinney in Leaders' Questions one morning in 2000 and late 2012. I said, the genie's out of the bottle, Taoiseach. You're bringing in the Protection of Life during Pregnancy Bill, in spite of the fact that you, through Phil Hogan, had issued 300,000 letters to people saying they weren't going to introduce abortion of any form. And Micheál called me aside that morning afterwards, and he said, can I give you a bit of advice, Matty? I said, of course you can, Micheál. And we met and we talked, and he said, just be careful and don't get boxed into an anti-abortion pigeonhole. And I said, thanks for the advice, Micheál, but no thanks. And if you stood with the people and said that are supporting the Eighth Amendment, you wouldn't be languishing at 18%.
So you knew from then?
I knew from then, that's 2012. Of course I did, you know what I mean? Right. And I know then by the overtures.
Do you feel any way strange, and I put this to Jackie Cahill as well, who has similar views to yourself on this issue, do you feel any way strange that it's men speaking out about what essentially is a woman's issue?
This is another issue. This is another issue, and the leaked document last night to get men just said, what's it got to do with you? Of course I do feel so. I have dozens of couples who are onto me trying to adopt. There can't be a pregnancy without a man being involved. Thankfully, I know that Minister Martin also supported the embryonic tests and everything else as well. So that's another thing that made me wary back a number of years ago. So there can't be. It has to be two people to procreate, and that's the way it is. So men, and I have men, why shouldn't men have a right as well, especially if there's going to be an abortion of a child that they want maybe to have and bring into life? And there's so many agencies, and we need to support the pregnancies and people through pregnancies, and we need to have a counselling. And the other issue is that all through that committee, they refused to hear from women hurt by abortion. They refused to hear from a group of women that came from the States here. They couldn't get a hotel in Cork. They got a hotel in Silver Springs in Dublin. They got Silver Springs in Cork. They refused to listen to those. And why shouldn't, I mean, men are responsible, and they should be made, held accountable and made responsible as well if they don't want to, if they're uncaring. But when there's such a need, I believe that life, you know, it begins at conception, and I believe that it must be supported. And who is to speak now for the vulnerable baby in the womb? Nobody. And I mean, to think that all the political parties now would be gone that way. But the real problem with Fianna Fáil is...
There's a lot of people speaking for as you call it, the vulnerable baby. I mean, you're doing it yourself, and you're out there with that all of the time. All right, just before you go, can I have a word from you on that proposal to extract the water from Lough Derg to facilitate that Dublin water supply? Because this is back in the news again. Huge issue. People saying now that you'll end up with a surplus of water in Dublin, and that will promote the idea of more industry in Dublin taking jobs from rural Ireland.
Indeed, I brought that up with Minister Ross the other night as well in my debate. I fall over taxis up there, I fall over Lewis's when I come out to Mayor Day. So many of them are available. This project is another con job in the Irish people and the Irish taxpayer. Same as the Children's Hospital was, and is, and continuing to be. And, you know, starting off at 400 million and now being at nearer to 2 billion and, you know, not even up past foundations and in the wrong location. This, I'm not anti-Dublin, I don't want to give them water, and we should sell them the water we want it, but 1.2 billion to bring a pipe of that size to Dublin. Emma Kennedy has done a tremendous research, cost over 100,000 on this, and I'm organising for her to come to the AV room. She's going to travel back to Ireland again in fairness, she's in Austria, and we're going to let all TDs hear this and listen to this and see will they sit up and wake. And parties, are they going to just allow this to go ahead? And figures produced by Irish Water and consultants on their behalf, who have no basis for them, and many of them are factually incorrect, and in backing up the figures, they've quoted from different groups of consultants' reports who have denied the figures. So this is wide open for picking. I hope to raise it in the Dáil this week as a topical issue. Are we going to go ahead with this madness, 1.2 billion? Mm. And as I said, to bring water to Dublin.
And now we're hearing about a 57% leakage.
So we know that with long term, 57% leakage stuff. And that, from that point of view then, there's dangerous substances getting into the water in Dublin through the leakage inwards. And if we put more pressure from water coming up here into the reservoirs in Dublin, it'll put more pressure on the pipes and they'll be worse leaks. So we first of all should have stop the madness, get it evaluated independently from some group from abroad. Why do we have to be the wool pulled over our eyes? And above all, Paddy the taxpayer, that man on the road last night that you helped with his bus tie on a pothole, he's paying his taxes for it. And we're all paying for it. So, I mean, this is another monster being created by Irish Water. They need water in Dublin, yes, but they need to stop the 56 or 7% leaks they have, first of all. They need to manage their system. And
what's
in
your feeling on it? Will it go ahead at all, do you think?
Oh, it will go ahead, because unless the big parties, Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, listen to reason, it's going to go ahead. Like the monstrosity of HSE, look where we're. Like the monstrosity of the whole creation of Irish Water, look at the mess and the people we have. I'm trying to get legislation through to insist that combined drains behind people's houses that were always in charge by the council.
Very few things are as blatantly obvious as this. 57% leak in Dublin. The water you send up to Dublin is going to go out through the leak. And like, it's just ludicrous.
Look, Fran, a handful of us, including Jonathan Irwin and some very eminent consultants, oppose the Children's Hospital. That's as blatant. They can't land a helipad. Yeah. They can't land a helicopter with sick children. Trying to get an ambulance to scream and trying to get through traffic to get into that hospital when they had a site out, and they still have it out in the M50, which would attract them from all parts of Ireland, and build on a new site would be much easier. When the amalgamation of Cashel and Tip took place, I advocated that time for a greenfield site out around Redcreven, somewhere on level ground, and you wouldn't have the problems in Clonmel, because you could have built new and flat and built a modern building. Like, Cashel was even built in the 50s and it's a modern building and there's access to it. It's not climbing up a hill. So I'm just making the point that will it be stopped? I mean, people have a crazy way again, and the media, oh, McGrath and them fellas, they're cracked, they've all these wild ideas. We're speaking the truth, I was speaking common sense. But see, the problem is to get it exposed in the media. Irish Water are huge advertisers. So media don't want to run with it. I have met journalists and different issues.
We don't have a problem.
Yes, and I appreciate that, and thank you. I've met journalists who did great stories, but then never got published in editorial, but I put it down to them. I know what it's down to. I was told off the records are down to
advertising. What are you saying, that there's influence?
Yes, and that's what's wrong with this country. Influence. Same with the HSE. Acres of advertising in the Sunday papers. Are they going to get objective critique? Then they're not, because that's what's wrong with this country. Influence and bad decisions, and it wouldn't happen in any place else. I mean, it wouldn't happen.
All right. Matty, good to talk to you today, and thanks for dropping into us.
If it matters to you, it matters to us. Call TIP today on 1-800-938-007.
Ross Gray Community Hub and Ross Gray Listens have set up a listening cafe service for anybody who needs somebody to talk to. Mike Edwards joins me on this. Mike, good morning to you.
Good morning, Fran.
It's good to talk to you today. Tell me about this idea, Mike.
The idea came about from one of the group sessions that used to be run in Cray House in Ross Cray by the mental health social worker. A person just said that, you know, while the groups were running, it was great. They'd have somewhere to go, somewhere to chat from and talk to people who would be like-minded or understand how they felt. So when the groups closed, a couple of us decided to set up a listening service. What it is basically, it's a peer support group. It's like-minded individuals and people with the same experiences through mental health, suicidal ideation or bereavement, a whole range of things. And it's just somewhere for people to go and chat and have support. It might be support to just talk to the HSE or another service, or just somewhere to chat and say that, you know, the last couple of days have been difficult and they want someone to chat to about it.
Now, I know it operates from Choc na Gréine, is that right, in Glenglass in Ross Gray?
Yeah, it's the community house in Glenglass.
I think, is it one morning a week, Mike?
One morning a week at the moment, but we're available 24 hours a day on Facebook. We've had a few calls on Facebook. We've had one intervention on Facebook, thanks to the National Ambulance Service, who responded very quickly. Other than that, yeah, it's just people come up, they have a cup of tea or a cup of coffee, a chat, and then they tend to get together themselves as well afterwards.
Very good. So it's a drop-in centre for those couple of hours, really?
Yeah, it's just a drop-in. People can walk in. They don't even have to talk. They can sit and listen, have a bit of tea and coffee and a chat. That's all it really is.
Is it a one-to-one chat?
Well, it can be a one-to-one chat if somebody requires that. But generally, it's just people having a chat. This is only a peer support service. We're not Samaritans or Irish Fallon or anything like that, although we are quite happy to get people in touch with the services they might require at any given time. But yeah, it's just a peer support thing. The group's no longer active in Roscrea, you see. The HSE don't have a mental health social worker at present running groups in the town. So we're just there in the hope that we can give service to somebody.
All right. And how many people are in need of services, do you think, in the town? I mean, is it...
I'm uncomfortable commenting on that. I'll say this. On a personal basis, I lost a son to suicide, and I've suffered suicidal ideation myself. And it's important that people have somewhere to go and talk or have someone who can listen and understand what it is exactly they're going through. You don't need to be a mental health worker to know that sometimes people just need a chat.
And that can save a life, in your experience, Mike?
It can. I think it's more a case of people know there's support there. This isn't just about providing a life-saving skill or anything. This is just somewhere for people to go who might feel a little bit down, a bit lonely, or a bit isolated. And sometimes, you know, just that sympathetic ear and a cup of tea can work wonders.
All right. So tomorrow morning you're open then?
Every Tuesday, 10 a.m. to 12.
All right. And literally people can drop in?
Anybody can come in. They don't even have to have an issue. They just want to come in and have a chat and a cup of tea. They're more than welcome. Glen Gloss have been very supportive in this. They haven't charged us money for tea or coffee, electricity, anything. They've given the house for free. And we're very appreciative of that.
Well, it's a fantastic idea altogether. So that's tomorrow morning, every Tuesday morning between 10 and 12. Chocolate Grain, just for people who might be too sure, where exactly is that in Roscrea?
Glen Gloss is just, you pass the train station, go over the bridge, and Glen Gloss is the second housing estate on the right.
All right. Listen, good to talk to you, Mike, and it's great work. Thank you for talking to us today. Thank you. Good morning to you. That's Mike Edwards there with that new listening group in Roscrea. And Roscrea Listens. Nice idea, isn't it? 1800 938 007. You can text on 083 311 3311. As ever, we'd be glad to hear from you. Eddie, good morning to you. Hello, Eddie.
Hello.
Hello, Eddie. How are you? You have an issue with the roads.
No, it's not. Eddie, who is that?
Oh, I beg your pardon. All right. I'll tell you, we must have confused lines in some way. 1800 938 007. I think, all right. You do have a problem with the roads, Eddie. Is that right?
Well, no, it's related to, I had an occasion, I don't travel very much on the roads, but I had an occasion to go just outside Thurles the other evening.
Right.
And it was a very dark evening. And of course, first of all, you can't see the roads at the potholes when there's water in them.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
No. I counted the potholes coming back from Thurles. I had a very near miss with a very bad pothole there, just as you're coming into Holy Cross. I'm talking now specifically of the Cashel Overland Holy Cross Thurles Road.
Okay, yeah.
Now, it was so bad that I counted the potholes coming back, and it was, you could say, about over, there was over 12, some on the side of the road. There was a very bad one there at just before you come into Boholan.
Mm-hmm.
And they had three cones stuck in the middle of it. And you had to go onto the wrong side of the road to avoid the cones. There was no sign of them being visible. Only in the dark of the night, you could hit them and drive them into a ditch.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely dreadful. And as you say...
Now, the roads, I would say, the question I'd like to ask there, I'm sorry I didn't get to Matty, was where is the property tax going to? We had an increase in property tax lately, And I would like to know, where is the transparency and accountability of the property tax? And if they were going to fill in the potholes in the road, I would accept that. But we have nothing, we have no graph, nothing to say where it's being spent.
And, I mean, the road you're talking about, I agree, it's terrible, but I was talking about the road I came across last night going into Tipperary Town. Absolutely appalling. Where I live out around Anacarty there, just dreadful. I mean, literally craters in the road.
No, you know? I was in Killinall there recently. I had an occasion to go to Killinall. And the road there, it is another disgrace.
Yeah.
If we were living in Rhodesia or Uganda or in South Africa, we'd have better roads.
And you think that nothing's being done about this? And
there is absolutely nothing being done. We have a depletion of councillors, and I cannot for the life of me understand what they're doing with the money that's been allocated out from the national roads. Now, an awful lot of people have to go after 4 years to get their cars NCT tested.
Yeah.
And the tracking and everything is being damaged, and new cars are being damaged by these roads. And there is no accountability, and nobody is answering the question, what's wrong, or where is all this money going to?
All right, well, listen, you make a very good point, Eddie, and thanks very much indeed for talking to us today. I'm sure a lot of people feel extremely strongly, just like he does, about the state of our roads and what should be done and what could be done about all of that. 083-311-3311.
Join the conversation in Tipperary. Contact us through Facebook, Twitter, or email tiptoday@tipfm.com.
For students and their parents choosing third level study options ahead of the closing date for the CAO applications, February 1st is never easy. Now, there are vast numbers of options to explore, and many find themselves confused when it comes to science, technology, engineering and maths, that STEM related courses. I'm joined on the line now by Margie McCarty, Head of Education and Public Engagement with the Science Foundation of Ireland. Good morning to you, Margie.
Good morning, Fran.
It's good to talk to you today. There is confusion out there, and I think if the parents are confused, it adds to the whole issue of a young person making a choice. Is that fair to say, do you think?
Absolutely. I think particularly when young people are going through pressurized times, considering exams and their study timetables and all the rest, they tend to turn to their trusted parents and friends for advice in consideration of subject choices and their careers. And quite often people will lean then on what their own experiences are and what they think is a good fit for their kids. And we've experienced through the Smart Futures program that an awful lot of parents just don't know where to find information on careers in science and technology or engineering. And so quite often those choices and opportunities can be left off the list completely because there isn't enough information at their fingertips. And that's really what the Smart Futures program is all about, is making sure that parents and kids know how they can get that information very easily in their own homes during their own time.
And the reality is that there are fantastic opportunities in STEM, really.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's fair to say that most jobs don't have technology. Most jobs have technology at their core these days. I was only joking the other day saying bringing your car to the garage these days, it's more like plugging it into the computer for the diagnosis.
Absolutely.
And then do the work than anything else. But I mean, I think you had somebody on talking about heart stents earlier. I mean, all of that technology has been developed through science, and technologists and engineers all working together to figure out how to make our lives better and, I suppose, meet the challenges that food production and climate and all of that, all those things that we're facing into the future will be helped in terms of solutions by people who have studied and pursued careers in the areas of STEM.
Is that issue of the gender balance here, does that come up as well, that these STEM career paths are typically not for females? Is that still out there as a perception?
It is, unfortunately. We're still, I myself did engineering, and it's still in and around the 11% in the workforce. And what's funny is I grew up in a family where nearly all the girls did engineering, so it didn't actually dawn on me until I went into the workplace that people think this way. Yeah. And we're doing a huge amount to try and turn that around. And mostly what we're doing on the Smart Futures program, again, if people go on to smartfutures.ie, they'll see a huge prevalence of female role models. So these are women who are working in really great careers in the areas of science or tech or engineering, and have travelled roads that, you know, I think all of us can say that our careers went in different directions than we would have predicted when we were sitting doing the leaving cert. But, I mean, women have fantastic careers in STEM, and we really are, I suppose, using role models to try and help young women in school and their parents to identify with. We did some research back 2 years ago on the Smart Futures program on what it was that influenced people's choices in first year in college. We found overwhelmingly that it was they wanted to fit in. They felt that people like them do this particular course. Mm. And if you don't have access to women who have gone into science or engineering, you may not consider it as a choice for you. And that's something we're trying to remedy by making sure people have access to those role models at their fingertips.
I presume part of the success of that will come from maybe being exposed earlier on in their education to those role models. And I'm thinking of, you know, early in secondary school, for example.
That's right. And, you know, through Science Foundation Ireland and the Smart Futures Program, we work with over 200 industry and academic organisations, and the vast majority of them come into schools in the early years. And of course, one of the key role models in the early years of secondary school is the science teacher. And we've tried to put up as much information as we can for those teachers and support them as well, because sometimes the teacher themselves has gone through college and they've gone immediately into a school and they're teaching the school subject in terms of the subject, whereas having industry people.
Oh, there you go. Well, what a pity there that we've lost Margie McCarthy. But just to give you that website again, if you want to have a look at it, it is smartfutures.ie. And ahead of that CAO deadline, to help you find out more, it's a very good resource indeed. So that's smartfutures.ie for that. And, of course, the whole business of STEM, much being discussed nowadays, and certainly seems to be a pathway into careers for our young people.